This is tape recording number 5011C29A and B, STP Lecture 11A and 11B. A tape recorded lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 29th of November, 1950. The title of this lecture is Standard Procedure, Circuits and Valences. Part A is 57 minutes and 12 seconds long. Part B is 38 minutes and 36 seconds long. Copyright C, 1950-1974 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by the Flag Audio Unit of the Flagship Apollo of the Sea Organization. And now, here is L. Ron Hubbard.
A precision definition for a Demon circuit, one for a valence, and I want to give you a graph, or that is to say a picture of how you can go about a straight wire and get the maximum amount of material without straining your imagination too much. With regard to a Demon circuit, we have, as its basic definition, a Demon circuit is that mental mechanism set up by an engram command, which, becoming re-stimulated and supercharged with secondary engrams, takes over a portion of the analyzer and acts as an individual being. That's a Demon circuit. It's a specific thing. It takes an engram command, which takes over a part of the analyzer and becomes an individual being. The missing words there is becoming supercharged. Becomes supercharged with the occurrence of the key-in of the engram command, the engram itself, and then by receiving secondary engrams on top of it. This makes a nice, real, live demon. There are many, many such commands in a case. There are literally thousands of them in the ordinary case by the crude definition. That is to say, this isn't a complete demon circuit, but you could say there are potentially thousands of them on a case. A crude definition would be any command containing you and seeking to dominate or nullify the individual. Any command addressed to the eye which seeks to dominate or nullify the individual is potentially a demon circuit. It doesn't become a real live demon circuit until it becomes keyed in and supercharged with secondary engrams of the grief and communication breaks and and reality invalidations. Now, when that occurs, you have a demon circuit. As I said, there are thousands of these things in a case potentially. This doesn't mean that all these thousands have become supercharged. Usually, a demon circuit will be a whole chain of practically the same command re-stimulated. There'd just be somebody's dramatization there, and command after command after command of the same nature. And then all this whole chain of commands, more or less the same command. If you take the mechanism, you've got to think of the other fellow, which is a sort of a valence shifter and a demon circuit all by itself, and you get this thing all mixed together. That's a sort of a borderline thing. You've got to think of the other fellow. You start thinking of the other fellow, and then some other command's liable to come along and boost the person, a real valence shifter come along, and keep the person boosted into another valence. You see, that's not a circuit, the valence shifter. All right, you've got to think of the other fellow. And this thing occurs in the case many times. This was some aberee's dramatization, and it got into this person's engram bank. And then life came along and took this thing and began to re-stimulate it. And after it became very thoroughly re-stimulated, then he would have what he considered a stream of consciousness about the other fellow. I would be talked to and persuaded and so forth about the other fellow. You get some of these things up to a point where they have such a high power of supercharge and so on, that an individual where I is so robbed by all this that, and the charge is over there and part of the analyzer is over there in the demon circuit, that the individual will talk to himself. Of course, I know nobody in this room ever talked to himself, but All right, that's what basically this mechanism is. In order to get rid of a demon circuit, one has to reach the phrase or phrases which created it and reduce that phrase or phrases in the basic on its chain. In the basic on its chain. That's the way you get rid of one. You take the tension off of this basic and the whole chain will have a tendency to collapse up the line. But if this case, if this is a real live circuit, your chances of getting the basic off of that chain are reduced by the fact that the individual has received many secondary engrams on top of this. Therefore, there is a charge there. Well, now the charge fights against the eye and the auditor. This charge, you know, is the place it comes from is from the eye of the individual. It is borrowed off the eye of the individual and reversed in polarity, you might say, and is roped off. And here we have the problem, and this is your tough case, right here. The problem of getting off charge off of a demon circuit so that it can be reached and reduced or erased. And the problem in getting the charge off is very often the problem of reaching the demon circuit and reducing and erasing it. You see how that would be? The demon circuit got that way by becoming supercharged, and in order to get rid of this demon circuit, you have to reduce and erase the thing. It's very interesting. You're actually sawing against two things. Let's say a demon circuit says you've got to protect yourself, and it just has enormous amounts of charge on the thing. There's lots of charge there. I is pretty well reduced, and you try to get this, you've got to protect yourself out of the case. Well, you can't reach that because the pre-clear's sense of reality is very poor, his sense of affinity is very poor, and his ability to communicate is very poor. Well, of course, in a large measure, these things are very poor because there's that circuit there, and because charge has been insisted in that circuit. All right? Now, it says you've got to protect yourself, so every time the auditor goes into the case, first, he is faced with this mechanical proposition of the charge on the thing. The thing is very highly charged. Person may be off of his track and pushed away from his reality. He's rather badly out of contact with his own past. And the auditor is repulsed, you might say, just like the eye is repulsed every time it tries to approach this circuit. And yet, the auditor can't get any of the charge off of the circuit appreciably because it says you've got to protect yourself. So every time he tries to come into this circuit, of course, probably the full text of the circuit, you've got to protect yourself, you've got to help yourself. Now I'm going to tell you how to do this and so on. I mean, there's probably lots more to this circuit. I'm just giving you, you've got to protect yourself. And the auditor comes into the circuit, and naturally, he isn't going to be able to find out what is the core of this circuit. Now, the whole trick is trying to find out what's the computation. What is the phrase, or what are the phrases, which compose the bottom of this circuit? Once he gets those phrases, he will be able to take some tension off of the circuit, even by hitting an engram two or three from the bottom on the chain. But if he can get this phrase and go back on the phrase, get the basic on its chain, that demon circuit will be very shaky. And the next time the auditor tries to go into the case, why, this circuit isn't protecting itself too much, and the charge which it has picked up can be bled off the case. This is your contest. And this is why you look at some of these cases and you say, oh my, this is a very tough case, a very tough case. Well, if you put it in the phrase, it's a very tough case, then one is sort of left staring at this thing as an unsolvable something. Well, let's not call them very tough cases. Let's just call them supercharged circuitry cases. Now, a supercharged circuitry case, nothing should ever be named in any field of skill, named a name which does not in itself lead to the solution of the problem. That is to say, if you can possibly name something in such a way that it indicates the solution of the problem, that is a good name. That's good classification. That's good labeling. This, by the way, argues against this tremendous program of Latin, Greek nonsense that many of the old branches of the sciences, natural philosophy, and so forth used to engage in, because they would call phenomena by a fancy name just to have a label on it, and then say, having named it, we now know about it. Only they didn't, and it barred knowledge of this thing. Now, we could very well call the supercharged circuitry case, we could very well call this case the Lingo Turo case, and that leaves everybody blank. But it'd probably be a very, very nice name from the derivation of words and so forth. We could go and pick up this and justify this, and we could all be very learned, and we wouldn't be 3 seconds closer to the solution of this case. Now we start calling it a tough case, and that is equally a useless name. But let's call them something on the order of a charged circuitry case, or a supercharged circuitry case, if you want to be very, you might say, conservative, call it a charged case, superchargers or something to put in automobiles. All right. Now, the second you recognize that the reason this person can't reach his reality, and he can't develop affinity, and he has a hard time communicating, is because I has been robbed by a circuit. Now, that having happened, you get this interplay. Then you try to get the charge and the circuit goes into action. You try to get the circuit and the charge goes into action. You try to get these two apart. You start robbing the circuit in the solution of it. You can start robbing this circuit of an attention unit here and an attention unit there, and you can start to rehabilitate I with straight memory, straight wire. And then as you go a little bit further, you can get recalls on who used to say what. And if you get enough attention units back, all of a sudden the person is going to run into this computation, if you, as an auditor, have the patience to look for this. And having run into it as a computation, then you slam it with repeater technique, walk it right on down the bank, find it at the bottom, earliest time that you can find it, get earlier and earlier on this same phrase, even if you have to run it a few times every time you find it, and you finally get down to the bottom of it, chances are his sense of reality on it is not going to be too high because you're still fighting against charge. He may be way out of valence, but he can still run this thing. He can still take some tension off of it. Well, you upset this circuit, and you de-intensified it, and now you can start rescuing from it the attention units which secondary engrams captured from I. And you can go and try to get a little charge off this case. Now, it would be relatively an incorrect statement to say that there is one central computation on a case, that there's just one circuitry computation on a case. As a matter of fact, that would be completely erroneous. There are many. But there is one circuitry computation on a case which you have to reach first. This is a needle in the haystack proposition right at first with one of these cases. You want to find out what's fairly wrong. What's wrong with this person? And you have to punch around for a while until you finally discover what is. And that consists of the dramatizations of the persons who surrounded this person's prenatal period and childhood. You get these dramatizations into sight. You get some recall on these dramatizations, and the first thing you know, you will have the data you need to spot circuits. You take the dramatization and you look it over carefully, and you see there what part of this dramatization most closely approximates the behavior of your preclear while you have him under process, and shoot it out of the case. Now, to tackle one of these tough cases on the basis of just let's go into the basic area and see if we can find an engram. Yes, I know he's all out of valence and he can't be reached, and he does reach one anyway. He doesn't know whether it's an engram or not anyhow. We'll just keep working on this basis. That would be very foolish. That would be very foolish. Because you're just re-stimulating the case more and more. The stuff you're reaching is not really reducing. And you're laying new locks onto the case, and you are stealing units off of I by doing this. If you happen to slip on this and leave a couple in very bad re-stimulation. The odd part of it is that you can slug away at a case like this without hurting and even sometimes improving the mental health of the individual. But the point is that your progress is on an upward curve of about that. You see, this is measured by hundreds of hours per inch. We want a technique that goes like this, and this one will do it for you. Now, just as there are supercharged circuits, so are there charged valence cases. This gives you another point of entrance into a case. A valence is a commanded mimicry of another person or thing or imagined entity. Would be your technical definition of a valence. It's the commanded mimicry, commanded by engrams, of course, of a person or an object or an imagined entity. Now, a person can have all sorts of these valences, you see. Here we run into the same problem that we have with a circuit. The valence is not the circuit. As I made very clear to you yesterday, the valence and the circuit are two different things. The valence is a whole person, a whole thing, or a large number of persons or things. It doesn't say in the engram, you have to smoke cigars. But if a person is fixed in the valence of somebody who smokes cigars, that person will smoke cigars. The valence is a sort of an identity all to itself that doesn't have anything to do with human beings. I mean, it's sort of come in and taken over as a parasitic circuit, a parasitic identity in the individual. But not a valence. A valence is the whole thing. You could have a valence there. You could have a multiple valence shifter that would shift somebody into the valence of the whole human race. This would be very interesting, cause some complications. But where your interest lies normally is a person is in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, and you're trying to get this person out of a series of valences. Are you trying to get this person out of the valence of a dog? Are you trying to get this person out of the valence of mon petit chou? Anything that has changed his whole identity. Now, this valence is interesting. The circuit robs I of attention units. And the valence transplants I. Now, does that make more sense to you? It transplants I. It takes I and puts them over someplace else. I now becomes grandpa or grandma. Now, the valence or valences, when they are human valences or animal valences, can be charged. The valence can be charged. It's like an engram. I had this picture, these three cylinders here. I showed you that valences, I, you know, is moving over into other identities and so forth, and I can be bounced out of these identities, or there's fixed in them, so on, anything that these action commands. You can even have a valence shifter misdirector. You don't know who you are. You're just from person to person, day to day, you're just like whoever you talk to, something like this. But you can't be anybody. Of course, that's a valence shifter type of command that just bounces a person out of any valence he tries to get into. You can't be anybody. It also bounces him out of his own. So he's sort of in the never-never land. This is not good for reality. Now, you see there that the valence shifters transplant I, and these valences can be charged. Now, let's say that little Lulu, as grandma, died at the age of 5. Little Lulu was 5, grandma died. Up to that time, people used to come around and say to little Lulu, you're a nasty-tempered little brat. You're just exactly like your grandmother, and so on. I mean, people used to say something like that because they said to little Lulu's mother, That temper you have, it's just like your mother's. You get more and more like her every day. And this gets down into the early engrams. And then it comes along and they tell little Lulu this, and this swings it in, charges it up. But in spite of all this, little Lulu likes Grandma very much. Let us say they make this a sympathy. You see, a sympathy engram's very tough, and a sympathy valence, then, is very tough. All right, little Lulu, Grandma dies, and little Lulu becomes Grandma. It's a supercharged valence. It's very mechanical, the way it happens. There's nothing very mystical about this. But over goes little Lulu into the valence, and down comes the charge. Now, to get little Lulu out of that valence while you're processing her, it's necessary to knock out this computation off the thing. But you can't reach the computation, which makes her Grandma, because the computation is protected by the charge. So you have to get the charge off the valence in order to get the computation engram. Now, there's the two other points working against each other. So you start robbing the valence a little bit and get I moved over just a shade by breaking some locks and some minor secondary engrams, not necessarily on this valence. You toughen up I a little bit, you bring up the individuality of the person, and you work away at the circuitry, and you hit this charge finally, and you get the charge off of this valence, and you get the person over into his own valence. Those are the two things, first and foremost, of course, of these circuits. The circuits are actually more important than the valences, because, merely because the circuits are a little bit harder to work with and there are more of them. And then there's the valences. Now, if you can't get a circuit off of the case, try to get the case in valence, trying to get a valence charge off of this case and get the case moved over as a valence, into his own valence. Work at it that way. But recognize that you're working on a specific variety of charge. Girl ran into one time, was in the valence of a collie dog. She was a psychotic, and she was in the valence of this collie dog, and in order to get her out of the valence of the collie dog, one had to get the charge off the death of this collie dog and several other incidents off the collie dog. Well, now, trying to get the death of the collie dog was very difficult, because the thing was very occluded and the circuits were pretty well stirred up and there was a lot of control on the case and so forth and fishing in there, until one discovered that the collie dog had been sick for some time and that the little girl had been quite afraid that the collie dog was going to die. Well, we got up this chain of stuff and we were able to get then at the charge of the collie dog's death. In other words, we unburdened this collie dog valence enough to get the eye. This poor girl would run yapping and barking, and it would just about cave in your eardrums. This also, by the way, she was a real screamer, would get mixed up with birth, where Mama screamed evidently for about 48 hours. And between the two of them, she would get into birth and start screaming like Mama in Mama's valence, and then she would get into the little bit later life, and she would get into the collie dog's valence, and she would bark and scream and howl, and we finally found out that the dog had been run over, and she was dramatizing the dog's dying. So she was dramatizing a woman giving birth, and then a dog dying, and then a woman giving birth, and the dog dying, and all in all, it was a very noisy case. Well, here we have come up to present time. I see there's some dead dogs around here. Now, being afraid for the valence, that is to say, let's say it's Grandpa's valence, being afraid for something that would happen to Grandpa, or something that happened to him, and to him, and so on, that's legitimate bait for the auditor on this valence. He shouldn't just go charging for the death if he can't get it easily. He tries to get the death, you know, and he gets this grief suppression reaction. Incidentally, you might say the first death ready to come off of the case is that one which makes the person breathe hardest. You know, you'll see the chest agitated. First death ready to come off will usually cause the greatest agitation. That's just a comment on the side. I've observed a few cases that acted like that. But fear for the valence. Fear for Grandpa. Let's say your preclear's in Grandpa's valence. And therefore, this valence has to be unburdened, and it is unburdened by Grandpa being afraid about various things, by the preclears being afraid for Grandpa. And you can get regain enough attention units on this valence to finally get it up to a point where it'll blow the death. I wish somebody would engage in a little project on that one of these days. I get so interested in case and never have time to do a refined piece sometimes. I do quite often, but this is a little refined piece of research whereby you just take a case that is badly out of valence, easily spotted out of valence, and has quite a bit of charged circuitry. You don't pay any attention whatsoever to the circuitry, but you just shoot away at the fear, apathy, and sorrow, grief, and so forth on this valence. Just shoot at the valence and see if you can finally blow the grief charge without using circuits. I think you could. I've never tried it. Usually, the way an auditor works is he regains some material off of the valence, and then eyes a little bit stronger, so he comes over here into circuitry, you see. And he works with circuitry for a while, and he gets some locks out of this, and he gets maybe some charge off of circuitry, secondary engram over here, off of something else that's happened to the person. And then he goes back over here to the valence, and he works for a while, and he goes back over to the circuit, and he shoots down to the bottom of the bank and blows out the chain on the circuits. Over, and he unburdens the valence and gets the person out of valence into his own valence, and then he goes back and runs some more out of the circuit. You see how it's done? Play one against the other. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. There are so many points you can hit in a case that for anybody to sit idle and look at a free clear and say, well, I just don't know what to do next on it, this is an auditor dramatizing an apathy. It is not based in fact. A scout should be able to take one of these cases and start knocking out enough locks and enough secondary engrams and run some of this and some of that, open up memory. I rehabilitated the point where you can just run the devil out of the circuits and the valence commands and so forth. Don't expect one of these cases to start fast. You could be fully prepared to spend 20, 30 wire. If this case is very bad and has a very bad sense of reality, you are actually saving time to go at it in a good, methodical way. The test of whether or not you're getting someplace is normally, is this person's memory? You actually don't give much of a hang about the person as such. That will open up in the far distant future. That's just a little sidelight. The preclear is happy to have his memory open. This makes him a little bit satisfied. And as the memory opens, more it keeps coming into light. Now, if you can keep opening and expanding and deepening a person's recall by very engram, you are on your way. You are gaining with this case. Stop being impatient. A case which is very, very thoroughly out of contact with reality and poorly in communication with the world, and with a rather low affinity, is not going to resolve ordinarily in 2 minutes. After all, it took some of these cases 20, 30 years to get that way, and if you can resolve this case to where he's feeling pretty fine and running very well in 20 or 30 hours, you're doing all right. You don't want to get up to a point where you want any miracles on this. Just 20 or 30 hours working this stuff out. That, I would consider, pretty good line of advance. Working a gentleman recently who case not terribly complicated, but stuck in a measles engram. Been there so long that his eyesight has very badly deteriorated. Matter of fact, practically blind in the right eye. Of course, you know about measles engrams. Carcinoma and so forth generally generate there. They re-stimulate birth and so forth. Somebody comes in and said, well, if you don't keep all the blinds down, if you don't keep this room awfully dark, and if you don't keep him very quiet now and so on, he's going to go blind. Yap, yap, yap. So this person gets along, and naturally there's holders and all sorts of things, and people used to worry very terribly about children when they had measles. And because measles were pretty bad, also works with scarlet fever. And you get into the incident, of course, and the person's blacked out, naturally. Well, this person was stuck on the track. And there wasn't anything one could do about that measles engram at this time except to unburden the case with straight wire. I merely proceeded to start unburdening the case with straight wire by a system which I'm going to show you here this morning, which puts no great strain on the auditor's imagination. He sort of sits there, and like the Tibetan who does all his praying by spinning the prayer wheel, sure, that's a very efficient way of praying, too. You get 1,000 prayers to heaven just like that. I got the case unburdened a little bit, but this was interesting. This fellow was stuck in the measles engram and would develop the fever. Oh, he'd become very hot and so forth. The seconds that you got him to touch any part of this, he'd been there for years. There wasn't any use in trying to budge him out of it or put him back into it. He was stuck there. But you could get him more thoroughly there. You could put more attention units there than there were there previously. And the second you did this, why, his fever would turn on. And he'd feel the fever and the hot flush and so on. And I tried to get him up to the end just by running the somatic strip out of the engram. Say, well, the somatic strip go to time got well. I did that a couple of times. And I sent the somatic strip earlier, and the fever turned off, just like that. Try to bring him up to present time, wouldn't turn off. Send him earlier, turned off. Gives you some kind of an idea of what's happening there. This measles engram is, 5 or 10 engrams up the chain. So of course it isn't going to reduce. It's on a chain of illnesses. Come to find out, this person was born with a very serious skin disorder. Isn't that interesting? Measles, you know, of course, you have an irritated skin and so forth, and it was a re-stimulation of birth. Skin disorder, and that undoubtedly goes on down the bank. He had a skin disorder when he was born. There was something wrong here. Don't know what Mama was up to, but I suspect. All right, now the basic on that measles holder is way down at the bottom of the case someplace, but you couldn't get him down the bottom of the case because his file clerk wasn't working. This whole chain has keep still, keep quiet, and don't say anything, and this is acting as a presser against the file clerk, so you get no flash answers. And instead of just giving it up and calling up the Humane Society and having him shot, took him down the track and then brought him back up by skipping measles, you see, and ran a lot of pleasure incidents, got him into pleasure incidents, in spite of the fact that he evidently has a suppressor on pleasure, but managed to find moments there. Pleasure incidents could be borderlines. You could get near them by going to a point where somebody gave him a good solid push and shoved him into the swimming pool. And he was sort of mad about it, but he could get this close to pleasure. Anyway, got a lot of attention units up there. Got him up to present time. Interesting, the number of callbacks on the case, though. Age flashes at various intervals. First, a 6 age flash. Then bring him up to present time, get a present time age flash, and then a couple of minutes later, get an 11 for an age flash. And so on. And then I finally brought him up to present time and patted him on the back hurriedly and went out and had a cup of coffee, because you could have kept this up all night. You see, it's legitimate if a person was there anyway to leave him in that state. That's the way you found him, after all. And you try not to worsen the case any by leaving him this way, but there isn't any reason why, and as a matter of fact, an auditor couldn't invest, why he should sit there for maybe 24 hours of auditing trying to resolve this case right now, because that's what he'd have to do to get the person up to present time. So it's legitimate. As a matter of fact, I don't think he'd been that far out of measles for a long, long while. But as I say, I just patted him and walked away. All right. Now, when you get a case that is stuck in an engram, don't blow out your brains or call for the Humane Society if a few hours of auditing don't resolve this thing. Try these other things, just to bring him up into a few pleasure moments. And if you can't do that, why, get some recall on some, you know, put in some straight wire. And then try to run him very early and come back up the track by skipping the engram in chain in which he's stuck, and some of his attention units will go over it and come on up to present time. In other words, just try to work him out of it. But the way you're working him out of it is restoring attention units to I, not by addressing the engram in which he's stuck. Because being stuck on the track is just another symptom of a robbed I. That's just another symptom of it. It means that I doesn't have the force, the pressure, the power to overcome the charges on the bank or to move ably on the track. I repeat that I is not necessarily held in an engram just because the engram has a holder. It's true that this engram has a holder, but in order to get the person out of this engram, it is sometimes necessary to pull units out of other parts of the track and restore them to I, and then you'll finally get him out of the engram. Yes, Jim? Now, go over that again, Jim. That one that you knew all about, de-intensifying the holders and the callbacks and so forth in which the person was stuck, that's a standard method of getting a person unstuck. But actually, one shouldn't labor this too hard. One shouldn't, for instance, you take this case, that technique is a standard technique. I mean, if you can get these things readily, de-intensify them very rather easily, you get the person out of the engram. But we're talking about a rough deal now whereby the file clerk won't give you any of these things and where you can't get any visio on these things. The person just blanked out on it and he can't get moving and you can't get any data off the thing. Well, you start to employ at that moment these other techniques, which, by the way, are the basic techniques for getting the case resolved anyway. And you don't employ much different techniques in getting a case moving on the track, actually, than you do in breaking up charge, getting restoring I. But you can, by being too insistent and by dreaming up holders and callbacks for this fellow to repeat, you can repeat him into four or five other engrams, and you can drop out of I a few more attention units, and I can't afford to lose them. You're just working against yourself when you do this to a case. Now, I hope you have these two things clear in your mind now, the demon circuit and the valence. There is no reason to confuse them at all. The reason I have stressed them as separate entities is because you have to know their anatomy in order to do something about them. Both of them require that I has to have restored to it attention units. You know, the theory of the attention unit is that I might be considered to be potentially composed or was initially or genetically composed, let us say, of 1,000 units, and that every lock, that is every key in and lock and secondary engram on the case has robbed I of a few of these attention units until I is less and less potential. Now, the system of resolving a case can be looked at on the basis of restoring attention units to I. And when you have restored to I all of the attention units which are on the bank, you can consider that your case is clear. This is another definition for clear. You could actually go ahead and knock out all the restimulation off of a case, knock out the key ins, and take the grief off of a case, and leave a complete bank full of engrams which weren't restimulated, which were no longer keyed in, and you would have a person who would pass for a clear. Of course, unfortunately, next week or the week after, why, an attention unit or two will be robbed off of I by these engrams. They're the villains of the piece, but they have to have the rest of the mechanical setup in order to act. That is to say, they have to have key in, and they have to have locks and secondary engrams in order to be charged up. Now, for instance, you go down the bank and you run an engram out of a person. This engram's never been hit before. Let's say you run this engram through once, and you've got a pretty live somatic on this engram, and then you bring the person up to present time. What you've done, effectively, is artificially key in this engram. So, not a terribly serious key in, but you've keyed it in all right. This engram is now active where it wasn't active before. Now, you can lay this in its grave rather readily and easily by running a pleasure moment, because those tension units were just then put into the engram, let's pull them back out again a little bit by pleasure. And with the person in present time now, let's make him remember the processing. And this thing will blow out as a lock. You get the, but you're in trouble with a case that if you just run an engram here and an engram there and you don't do anything to ease this case, you just run the engram once or twice and you guess maybe this is a good idea to maybe let's get this case all stirred up, as one auditor used to think one had to do. Let's stir up this case. Well, what the devil's he doing? He's just pulling attention units off of I, and he's making the pre-clear very uncomfortable, and he is accomplishing no processing whatsoever. There are lots of engrams in restimulation all the time, and an individual auditor does not have to have a stimulation in an engram before he can erase it. That is one that people have sort of picked up along the line and thought might exist, that if an engram were not in any way restimulated, it couldn't be located. This isn't true. The technique of sending somebody back down the track and asking for a flash of the first words and so forth will pull what you might call a sleeper right straight through, and you can run out this engram. In other words, it doesn't matter whether the engram is restimulated or not, the auditor can reach it. But if the engram is too thoroughly restimulated, in other words, is pretty badly charged up, then it gets very difficult to locate, very difficult to pull up, unless one unburdens some of the charge off of it. I hope you understand the mechanics of how this is done now. You will understand them better if you keep your notes, and as you tackle a case, look at the case in the mechanical terms of a valence or a series of valences, possibly, and circuits as something else. This eye is being told things continually by other circuits, or being guarded, quote, guarded, unquote, by these other circuits, and by these circuits, and he's being shifted around into these various valences. Now, on this subject, you could say that your case is easy to resolve in some ratio to the fewness of circuits and general valences. Fewness of circuits and valences, case is easier to resolve. Now, there's an actual curve that follows one after the other. But when you're going into a case, pay very thorough attention, very close attention to the sense of reality, the person's ability to communicate, and to the person's ability to develop affinity. The trouble with affinity, by the way, is that engrams and the society force a person to display it very often. So a person might appear to be relatively friendly, and it's just sort of a dramatization. He isn't friendly at all. It's a covert hostility at work. The psychiatrist is very, very bedeviled by this covert hostility. Evidently, most neurotic people hang below the anger tone band. They hang below that, so they go between fear, anxiety, you see, and up into covert hostility. They oscillate in those two points. That's on the reactive level. And estimating then the reality of the individual by his ability to actually accept what's in these engrams, that's a test. That is not a very fair test, looking at it bluntly, because this is something you could hang on an individual. He's got a very poor sense of reality because he doesn't believe so and so. This rather invites the auditor to enter a computation upon this case, to say, well, you ran that engram, the reason why you ran that engram, you don't realize it, just got a bad sense of reality, that's all, and yap, 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 I can see it happening now. That would be very, very bad manners. Matter of fact, if I ever heard of anybody doing that, I would have them up before the Board of Ethics and Standards, that fast. That would be laying a serious lock onto the case. Now, you estimate the sense of reality, ability to communicate, and affinity, and estimating these things, you get immediately an estimate of the valence and circuitry and charge difficulties of this case. If these three things of the triangle are poor, you know immediately that there's lots of charge on the valences and the circuit. And you know that you had better pull back some of the charge out of the valences and the circuits and get rid of some of the valences if you can and some of the circuits if you can as your first order of business in this case. Restore I to its proper position, which is the valence proposition. Resolve the valence. De-intensify a valence. You don't even have to find the valence shifter. If you could de-intensify the valence, I could come over to his proper position. As a valence charges up and gets more and more charge, a person is more and more fixed in it, or more and more repelled out of it, if it's the kind of valence that's set up as a bouncer. Your mother was a good woman. You never could be like your mother. You can't be like your mother. You're entirely different than she is. She was a good woman. She was honest. She took care of the family. She did all of these things. She worked hard. And you can't be like your mother. And then they wonder why this little girl's a juvenile delinquent. Because she can't be like the one model she had of a good person. The avowed purpose of the person who was saying all this to her, perhaps, was to make her a good woman, which, of course, had exactly the opposite effect. Now, that gives you some kind of an idea of a charged valence. Now, there would be a bounced-out valence, but if you start to discharge Mama's valence, get the charge off of it, I can finally get into it a little bit now and then, enough to mimic with it. And you would see an enormously changed pattern of conduct of this juvenile delinquent. Incidentally, this is an actual case. The person would be able to be a good woman because the valence out of which she shifted, has been discharged, and this Mama can be imitated. All right? Therefore, charges on valences are very important in a case, so you discharge them. Remember that each valence can be said to have its own time track. As a matter of fact, you can send the pre-clear back down the whole, his whole track as his father, if you want to, and discharge all of his father's sorrows. You won't get much charge on the thing, but every time you can spring one attention unit up, you gain. Now, it's usual, the way you measure the amount of good you have done the case, or the amount, number of attention units which you've sprung off of the case and gotten back to the case's eye, the number is estimated by the amount of relief displayed by the case. For instance, the case is, well, that's all right, he'll remember these things and so forth, and he remembers them, and he brightens up once in a while and he remembers something. The case would be basically pretty apathetic, but every time he brightened up a little tiny bit, or you got a new memory on the thing, you've restored a unit. Just brightens up just a trifle, just for an instant. If you restore 15 or 20 units all at a crack, it will occur that the fellow will chuckle a little bit. Yeah. And if you want to, sometime, if you want an estimate that is, say, the 50-unit release and restoration would be, my God, what do you know? Boom, ha, ha, ha. Real line charge. And when you've got a whole case which is blowing locks from one end to the other, the person will laugh uproariously and unrestrainedly sometimes for as long as 48 hours. Anything you give this person to read, look at, he'll read a little bit and all of a sudden hit a word which is contained in one of his locks. You see, he's not blowing his engrams, he's just blowing these locks. The whole case was just completely solid with locks. Why, you start blowing up and he'll see a word that's contained in a lock and it'll blow the whole lock. And you'll see another word, blow that lock. He'll just get going on this. I've seen two or three auditors sit around and just practically torture a pre-clear to death when he was running one of these things, because pre-clear would get into a situation, well, he'd be sitting there and he'd have run out of line charge at the moment. And then one of the auditors would say, now go over, I'm dying. And the fellow would say, I'm dying, I'm, ha, 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 and he'd be off again. I'm dying. Now let's go over the phrase, your mother is dead. Ha, ha, ha. See, he's way off on the long line. Now let's go over the phrase, I hate you. I hate you, I hate you. Ha, ha, ha! This Boeing line charge is a very interesting phenomenon. It's very hard on people's nerves sometimes. You get a couple of aberrees around who don't know much about Dianetics, and they watch somebody going through these convulsions. And I swear, if a psychiatrist saw somebody doing this, he would probably want to lock him up immediately because it's absolutely uncontrolled. A person can't stop laughing about these things. I saw one fellow who laughed, and physiologically, his stomach got so sore from all of this laughter and so forth that he had an awful hard time of it for about a week. A case will do this if it is very, very, very heavily charged. You won't get a lightly charged case to do this. But a very heavily charged case will reverse these polarities just madly. Now, the amount of good this does the case is very marked, but I've never had psychometry on it. I would like to sometime have some psychometry on somebody just before he started to blow this type of line charge and get psychometry after he'd blown it. But the only trouble is you can never quite tell what moment the person's going to start blowing it. So I've never gotten the psychometry. All right, in the second half of this, I'm going to give you this chart of the auditor imagination saver. We have, as a major interest, I'm sure, the regaining of attention units and the general rehabilitation of the case by the auditor imagination saver. This is nothing terrifically new. I've been talking to you about this material here for some days. But I'm going to show you a codification of the material and a method of using it. The first thing that you would be interested in terms of this, is, of course, our triangle, reality, affinity, communication. The auditor uses this in this fashion. He, in straight memory, he starts in with anything which would break down reality. Now, you have a codification of those things, and Madame Peggy Benton got a concordance on some of the material put on the board here the other day and developed it further. And I'll see that that gets mimeographed. I'm going to see Marion right after this and see if we can't get a mimeograph of this concordance so that you see the various things you have to pick up, the types of incidents which would go about to make up a break of reality. So the auditor hammers around for a while with straight memory, picking up these things about reality, and just to vary the monotony, he goes and starts picking up some things that has to do with affinity, and then he comes around and he picks up some things that has to do with communication, and then he picks up some things that has to do with reality, and then he picks up some affinity breaks, and he picks up some communication. In other words, now the best way to remember this, I think, would be if we change these corners, doesn't matter which one's uppermost, of course, and we call it arc. He keeps swinging in an arc. Affinity, communication, reality, affinity, communication, reality. Of course, he isn't drawing any pictures for his pre-clear, but he knows what composes then breaks in communication or over-communication, over or under, you know. Breaks in affinity and or enforced affinity. You see a break off of or an enforcement on compulsion or inhibition works for each one of these. And he goes around the thing, and in this fashion he doesn't run out of ideas, and he keeps the memory of the pre-clear playing on new subjects and new people. And if he asks for something on communication, for instance, if he asks for who used to tell you had to talk? Now, that'd be too much communication. He used to tell you had to talk and so forth. And he'd think for a moment and tell me I had to talk. It's my father. He used to tell me, speak up. Yeah, speak up. And so you say, that's fine. You explore this a little bit more. So there's probably a speak up chain, some sort or other, if this was Papa's dramatization, straight down the boards. And that would be, you've gained a little point there on communication, so we swing over to reality. Who used to tell you that they hated you? Oh, nobody. Oh, my sister. Believe me, if his sister ever went around with this computation, I hate you, and so on, you can be sure that it's strung down the bank. Particularly if his sister is older. Because it might have been, you see, a little bit complex, but you look at a family pattern, and you find that the first child is not quite the same aberration pattern as the next child, by the time they get down to about the third or fourth child, these things are compounding because there's more and more personnel around Mama. And therefore, there's more and more commands. And in addition to that, Mama by this time has probably had a lot more keyed in. God help the third child. I knew a seventh child once who was a junior. So, here we have this. Now, it's fairly certain if we have the third child, if the second child has a dramatization and our pre-clear is the third child, he's going to have everything the second child had plus. I mean, that's just a safe bet. I mean, it's something there that you can use. So, we can follow this material down, and we keep putting this down. If we're keeping accurate notes on our pre-clear, we're putting this stuff down as potential circuits. A circuit that said, speak up. I tell you, you've got to speak up. That sort of thing. I can't hear you, you know. You've got to speak up. And it's this insistence and so forth. Well, if Papa said this continually, it was communication break. So we just go around the thing, and we picked up something. We won a little bit now on communication, so we try to win something on reality, and then we try to win something on affinity. In other words, I beg your pardon, win something on affinity, on reality, communication, on affinity, reality, communication, on affinity, reality, communication. In other words, round and round in this case.